argument.
Our first case for argument is United States against McIntyre. Mr. Mullins.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Brian Mullins, and I represent Jeremy McIntyre on his appeal of the district court sentence. We are arguing that the district court committed procedural error by treating the crack cocaine guidelines as mandatory. And I think first it's important to note an issue that was not really addressed in the briefs and really not addressed at the district court level, which is this is a fairly limited issue for appeal. The question is the starting point for the district court's departure for substantial assistance. And we understand that this court's precedent dictate that the court may not consider non-substantial assistance issues when departing under the mandatory minimum sentence. So the question is discreet. What is the starting point? Is it 60 months or is it the range of 63 to 78 months? But although the question is discreet, I don't think it's harmless error if the court would find that the district court committed procedural error, because even it's hard to say where the district court began its departure from. Was it from the higher end of that 63 to 78 month range or the lower end? And if it was the higher end, then I think if the court committed procedural error, the difference between 60 and 78 is significant.
Let me take you back to the beginning.
Yes.
And ask you, Mr. Mullins, why Judge Randa's clarifying comments about the advisory nature of the guidelines are insufficient to demonstrate that he could disregard the 18-to-1 ratio.
Well, I think he did use the word, I forget exactly what the term was, but he did indicate that it was advisory, although the district court in the United States versus Schmidt also indicated that the guidelines were advisory, the child pornography guidelines, but this court still found that the district court, I think the term was, put too much of a thumb on the scale of a guideline sentence. And
yeah, but would there be procedural error if he understood that the guidelines were advisory, but nonetheless he gave great weight to congressional judgment on the crack powder disparity?
Well, I think the overall context of the hearing has to be taken into account, and the court's comments throughout the hearing were that the court felt constrained by Congress's decision to limit the or to modify the crack law to an 18-to-1 versus 100-to-1.
But surely you would agree that Judge Rand, in theory, understood that the guidelines are mandatory, are no longer mandatory.
I think that's fair to say, given that we have been dealing with advisory guidelines for 7 years now, and Judge Randa has been on the bench that entire time.
It would be inconceivable, would it not be, to have a federal judge who did not understand this? Inconceivable. We'd have to remove that person.
I think, though, that courts can confuse the issue of the statute, the Fair Sentencing Act, versus the guidelines. And I think that might be what happened here, where, yes, the Fair Sentencing Act
He's permitted to give respectful consideration to Congress's views, can't he?
He's permitted, I think,
that's
required.
That's what he did.
Well, I think he went beyond that by saying that he had to follow what Congress
legislated. Had to follow it.
Well,
he
would
has to use the particular ratio to compute the guidelines. That's mandatory. But then he doesn't have to give a guideline sentence. Where did he say he had to give a guideline sentence?
Well, I would refer to page 16 of the sentencing transcript, where the court said, relative to the Fair Sentencing Act of 2010 and 2011 and the amendments, as the court has stated countless times, it's not its job to second-guess Congress. They author a law, and the court has to follow the law. And
yes, that's true, too. You can't second-guess Congress. You have to follow the law. You have to use the mandatory minimum. You have to use 18-to-1 to compute the guidelines. You must follow the mandatory minimum. There are a whole lot of musts here.
And that's all true, although I think the judge did not recognize that the guidelines are not mandatory. And
yes, but as Judge Rovner said, if a judge did not recognize that, we would have to remove him as demented. Right? It would be impeachable. It would suggest that the man has not been aware of anything that's happened in the legal system the last 7 years.
Although I think the court has seen a lot of cases where procedural error has been raised and has remanded cases fairly recently.
I mean,
certainly,
right after that, what you were quoting, he says, I analyze everybody personally, individually, because I have to, right? But that's an illusion. I'm not clear as it could be that the 3553A factors.
I think
he goes on and talks about this. And
what we believe the district court failed to do was independently assess whether the increased ratio for crack cocaine was appropriate to apply to this defendant, whether the circumstances that caused Congress to impose the higher penalties for crack were applicable in this case. And we do not believe that the district court went through that process, even though the issue was brought up to the district court. But we think the district court pretty much left its analysis at, well, Congress has imposed an 18-to-1 ratio, and separation of powers prevents the district court from deviating. And I think that's the overall tenor of the court's decision, despite some comments here and there that the court acknowledged that it had discretion and that the guidelines were advisory. We do not believe that the court followed the Supreme Court's ruling in Kimbrough that the crack guidelines in particular are subject to scrutiny by the district courts because they were not promulgated under the Sentencing Commission's traditional role.
Mr. Mullins, before you sit down, I know you're in your rebuttal time. Is the judgment's reference to heroin a clerical error? There was no heroin at all in this case, was there?
Correct. There were a number of drugs, but heroin was not one of them.
So
that
it was
a
clerical error.
Yes.
Thanks.
I will reserve the rest of my time. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Certainly, counsel. Mr. Koenig.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jonathan Koenig. I'm here on behalf of the United States this morning to ask that you affirm Mr. McIntyre's sentence. I don't usually do this, but I'm content to rest on my brief unless the panel has questions. Obviously, we don't believe Judge Randa is demented. He indicated towards the end of the transcript.
He'll be so thrilled to hear this.
Yes. Again, I'm very happy to answer any questions that Your Honors may have.
Yeah. Does the government plan to correct the reference to heroin in the judgment? I mean, it could have a practical impact, could it not?
I'm glad Your Honor brought it to my attention. I will look into it when I get back to the office.
Great.
There was not heroin involved in this case.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Not much for you to respond to, Mr. Mullins. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, and we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case. The case is